Hello and welcome to another episode of the Gadget Show podcast, the show where we geek out over gadgets so you don't have to, even though we know that you want to, really. I'm Susie Perry and today we're diving headfirst into, well, the pettiest, most dramatic and most expensive tech rivalries of all time.
Thank you, Susie. And of course, I'm Jason Bradbury. Now, over the years, we've seen some epic showdowns, companies going head-to-head, pushing innovation, and sometimes throwing a bit of shade along the way. In today's episode, we're breaking down these legendary rivalries, spitting facts, talking about the feuds and the surprising twists that made them unforgettable. So, come on, Susie, let's get into it.
Yes, but first of all, some questions from you guys. So thank you for sending these in. Let's start with Nigel Stockley, who says, I wonder what your opinions are to the very recent news that Apple's promised AI features that were originally expected in iOS 18.4, due next month, have now been delayed, with Apple now saying that they're going to roll them out in the coming year instead. Apple sold iPhone 16S on the promise of this functionality and heavily promoted it back in September with the adverts that featured Bella Ramsey. You might remember those. Now, these ads have been quietly pulled and all mention of personal context Siri being removed. Obviously, software does take time, but are Apple now over-promising and under-delivering? I can see people feeling coerced into iPhone 16 purchases, being a little bit annoyed, given that by the time all of the iOS 18's originally promised features are released, we'll be well into iOS 19 and the iPhone 17. Are you still with me?
I'm definitely with you. Can I just wave this at you, right? First of all, funny story. So it's a brand new iPhone 16 Pro. I decided to go with that.
You went and bought one. Okay, yeah.
I did, because we talked about getting the Nothing phone. I talked about Android. I was even interested in the 16S that you've just mentioned, but I've gone the whole way because of the content that I need to create, and the camera, quite frankly, is shockingly good. Also, quite just funny little aside, what colour is that case?
I can't really see with your... No. You know, disco lighting that you've got.
Here's the thing. I'm colorblind and I think it's grey. And I thought, I'll get myself a nice sort of, anthracite grey cover. And I came home and everyone in the house immediately said, why have you got a green cover?
Oh.
Anyway.
Okay.
That aside, the reason I bought a cover immediately on the day I got the phone delivered was because I'm such a dibblehead that I'll just drop it and smash it before I get it, you know, protected. But, I've got to say, I was really excited to try the AI or Apple Intelligence functionality and then almost immediately disappointed. I think this is a really well-made point. So thank you for that. And I too am rather underwhelmed. I think it's bad vibes, really. And I would like to suggest that what Apple do, not that we have that much clout, but perhaps a little, who knows, they should now over-deliver. They should say, look, this has taken time for this reason, for that reason. Be transparent about it. But in order to give you the service that we promised, we're going to give you this plus something else. You know that way that they do those things?
That's hilarious. That is not going to happen.
Disappointing. And then some of the deeper analysis, as they predicted, that I've done on my phone, it puts me on to GPT, GPT-4, I'm guessing 0.5 maybe, which is interesting. So sort of script analysis I was trying to do, or some kind of more mathematical stuff. It's just not that kind of digital butler, that kind of sits over the phone experience that they sort of promised.
Okay, just play devil's advocate for a moment, because obviously they did say that it would come in time. And I think people did expect it a little bit sooner. And
I think definitely. They went absolutely all in.
Well, they've given themselves, in a way, or they've tried to give themselves a bit of a get-out-of-jail-free card, this rolling launch system that they're doing.
Yeah.
I guess the question is, what do we think of that? And I think you've said quite clearly there that you don't think it's not good enough.
Well, a few months. I mean, it's a long time. And I was actually, full transparency. I was working for a mobile phone network, did some radio interviews to shout about the new iPhone 16, the whole range. Yeah. And I was saying that in good faith based on their Well, I'm going to say promises, because they were promises. And they haven't delivered them. And they are the most cash-rich company on earth. They are one of the most successful corporations in the history of humanity. They have the resources to do this. And if they don't think it's ready, they shouldn't have done it.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because they did invest a lot of money in promoting the phone and the range of phones. Kidding. So they must have thought that they could deliver it when they said they were going to. Yeah. And they obviously haven't been able to. So it's that process that they need to look at.
Yeah.
In terms of over-promising and under-delivering.
Yeah. But so, great point. Great point. Thank you so much.
There's another Apple one, actually, from Matt. Do you want to read that one out?
Yeah. Hi, team, says Matt. 9640. Question for you. I'm fully in the Apple ecosystem, but I'm bored of Apple's lack of innovation around their screens. That's interesting. Still no foldable phone screen or anything exciting on the MacBooks. Well, we were talking about Lenovo. Was it last week or the week before, Susie, where it actually pulls up and becomes a, you know, almost two monitors stacked on top of each other, where you can bend it over and you've got one in front to show people while you work, you know, on yours in front of you. So some real innovation in that sector. And yes, there's been a lot of talk, hasn't there, about, you know, let's call it a clamshell foldable iPhone. Do you think Apple will start to lose more and more customers in the years ahead? Thanks, Matt. I got to be honest with you. Okay, so I'm a big fan of Samsung. I mean, I'm a big fan of loads of brands, right? But I've got a particular penchant for Samsung and Apple and Lenovo and LG. Lots of the companies in this sort of space innovation scene. Despite that, I've never really been sold on the foldable screen thing. It doesn't work for me. I know people that love their foldable Samsung, right? It just doesn't work for me. And I just feel that with the way I use the device, I'll end up knackering it, which was the case, I know, initially, and apparently they've resolved those issues, Samsung. But I just don't know. And even the Lenovo, you know, innovative laptops that we covered in the, what was it, the Mobile World Congress report that we did, few episodes back, still not sold. I think it's really cool, and if I was like really rich and I could just have a couple of every, you know, three or four different laptops, I'd definitely get one to play with. But I'm not, and I want a laptop, and if I can afford it, a tablet, so that when I'm traveling and I don't want to take a big heavy laptop and charger, I can just take a little slither of a thing but still have some screen estate. So I don't know, Matt, if it's such a big deal. I don't want to lose.
I'm going to counter you. Let me counter you.
Please,
Just because if Apple bought out a foldable phone, I would have it. And if they
really
bought out...
See, this is fascinating. What is it about it that you...
Because I would want it, because so I want it to fit in my bloody pocket. Because it's that first world problem of the phone I have is, you know, you like your old phone, 13 Pro. And it's big, and I have to take a bag if I'm carrying it, because you can't put anything in your pocket anymore because it'll get stolen.
Well, I was in the shop buying this. I bought it from a local electronics store, which is I was really pleased to do. And the guy was so hot on me getting the Max. He was like, because he knows who I am, you know. And he said, you're a Max guy. Like, you need the Max. You can play the games on it and you whatever. And then I mentioned that my eyesight wasn't great. My son was with me and he took the mickey out of me. And the guy said, that's another reason why I should get the Max. And I said, yeah, but boys, this is so small and compact that I can keep it in my back pocket, which, by the way, I wouldn't recommend, because my wife keeps telling me I'm going to get it nicked when I'm in London.
Will.
But anyway, so I find it, I suppose I'm not wearing the tight Susie Perry outfits. You know what I mean?
I'm not wearing them anymore these days either.
I think it's that heavy. Interesting. Let us know. What do you think? Susie, have you got more to say on that? Because I don't want to shut you up.
But the question is, do we think that Apple will lose business if they don't innovate? And I think he makes a good point there.
Okay.
Matt, I think you've got a good point, and I think they will definitely be looking in at that. And I think they could do. It depends on the.
Wow.
We're going to talk about markets later on and how they shift and move, and how sometimes you think, well, they dominate, no one's going to get near them, and then it all changes. So, you know,
and then
that's our chat today.
I'll go back to this, insist that they edit this bit out, use AI to make me say, I think they're going to lose business and they should go for a clam phone.
We're not doing that.
No, genuinely, really interesting, Matt. You've really, really, backed up by Susie, really made me think about this. You might be onto something. Yeah, great stuff.
Let's see. Thank you for your messages. We absolutely love to read them all. So keep them coming, whatever social media platform you're on. And if you fancy a VIP pass to the Gadget Show, then make sure you're subscribed to our Patreon. It hands down is the best way to support our Gadget Show podcast. And you can get even more of our gadget-fueled madness if you subscribe.
Plus, if you want to listen without those pesky ads, Patreon's your golden ticket to ad-free listening or viewing. But wait, there's more. Exclusive episodes, including my highly anticipated lockup tour, which we keep mentioning and I haven't done yet. Another behind-the-scenes chaos. Now, look, the reason I've not done it is because it's...
You haven't had time to move the bodies or what?
There is a bit of that. It's like, what have I got? What's in there? What am I going to show the world? So I'm getting ready for the movie. This isn't a plug. It's just the fact. And I've got to go to the lockup because it's not very near me. And I've got to then get all my old consoles. So that's when I'm going to do it. But it's coming and it'll be good.
Right. Great. I'm so excited for it.
For Patreon members.
Plus, you'll also get the incredible chance to join us live in our studio in Birmingham when we're recording the podcast. So, you know, how good is that?
I think it's great. Honestly, it's a really, really cool thing. And we really need you to get behind it. If you can afford it. And if that's you, smash the Patreon button.
The link is in the description, of course. So come and join the fun.
Right, now it's time for our headline discussion on some of the biggest tech rivalries ever. I love it. I love it when we get a theme. For every world-changing gadget, there's a rival lurking in the shadows, ready to take the crown.
Yeah, so from epic battles that shape the industry to grudge matches that still rage on today, we're going to dive into the biggest tech rivalries of all time. Not our old rivalry. We're not diving into that.
No, that's not on the agenda. Apple versus Microsoft is an obvious one. PlayStation versus Xbox, probably... the biggest one in my mind that comes to mind. iPhone versus Android. We've just been talking about it. Some of these wars are older than the internet itself.
So get ready because we're about to relive the ultimate gadget showdowns.
Can I start the bidding, Susie?
You may.
iPod versus Zune. As if we don't know which one's going to win. The MP3 player war.
Oh, okay. This is incredible. I know you're going to do an intro. Sorry, but to jump in, it sounds so ridiculous now. But at the time, I remember when we did this, you know, it wasn't ridiculous. It was a very real thing.
Very elegant, very out there piece of industrial design. I remember the logo. Okay, I want to set the scene, Susie. Yeah. It's the early noughties. Digital music is booming and Apple... has just launched the iPod. It's sleek, it's stylish, it's a revolutionary piece of technology. But Microsoft won't let Apple have all the fun. Enter the Zune. In 2006, Microsoft's attempt to dethrone the iPod with a built-in FM radio, a social sharing feature, that's interesting, and a bold brown colour choice. I thought it was green. Because obviously I'm colourblind. Microsoft was convinced it had an iPod killer on its hands. So what went wrong?
Yeah. I mean, I'm just going to say the word brown for starters.
Okay.
Because, you know.
I'm just thinking green. Yeah.
Yeah. Green or brown gadgets.
Yeah.
No. So let's just go through some of the numbers. So iPod sales, over 400 million units. That.
Wow.
Before it got discontinued, obviously, 3 years ago in 2022, compared to Zune sales. So estimates suggest just over 2 million units before it got scrapped in 2011. So that in terms of the market share, iPod dominated with 70% and Zune never exceeded, wait for it, 3%.
Well, I'm not surprised.
Well, the first iPod in 2001 was launched at $399. This is dollars, so about £300 at the time because the exchange rate was loads better than it is now. While the Zune in 2006 was $249, so £130. So it was less than half price, you know, but it still, it just didn't crack it.
Here's the thing, right? And it does get to the heart of the matter. Are we doing a Zune cast?
Well,
today.
No. There you go.
We're doing a podcast, aren't we? Yeah. And so it wasn't just that Apple were effectively, not absolutely, but effectively first to market with a mass consumer device that had all of that emotion, that kind of Johnny Ives way, the designer, the British designer, I'm pretty sure he designed the iPod, way of sort of making this beautiful object, you know, this sort of a stunning piece of design.
Yeah, with a really very well unique thought interface. Through as well.
Very much so, cold to the touch, and just a beautiful.
That's so sexy.
Just the seductive nature of the swirly bit, and you know that counts for a lot, doesn't it? There's so much resonance in that product that we now refer to podcasts. You know,
exactly, and the iTunes Store was such a big part of this in terms of the hook. Launched in 2003, and it became the largest music retailer in the US 5 years later by 2008. I mean, that alone is extraordinary, isn't it?
Yeah.
Did you know this? Did you know that Steve Jobs actually thought that MP3 players were dead? They were finished before launching the iPod. Did you know that?
I did
not. So he had to be convinced by Apple engineers that it was going to be a good idea and that the MP3 was basically worth making. I mean, imagine if the iPod had not been made, had not been created. I think the landscape would have been quite different.
The landscape was meant to be very different. I mean, Microsoft spent $500 million just on marketing the Zune, and they still failed. The Zune HD in 2009, which was actually quite brilliant. It had a better screen, it had better sound quality than the iPod, and it also had an HD radio. But by then, the iPod Touch and, of course, the much vaunted iPhone had taken over.
So here's why I think some of the reasons why Zune failed. I hate the name Zune, actually. I struggle with anything with a Z in that's techie. I don't know why. I feel like it's... It must have an X in it or a Z because they're weird letters on Scrabble. Anyway, the iTunes. So basically,
what a
iTunes.
Broad dislike.
Well, anything. Well, not. Well, I suppose Xbox is the obvious one, and that's allowed just because it's
good.
Xbox. We'll get onto that later.
Otherwise,
on.
We'd have words. Yeah.
Yeah, I know we would. iTunes obviously was already king, as I mentioned earlier. So Microsoft had Zune Marketplace, but it couldn't match the iTunes massive catalogue and user base. And I'm going to say this as well, incredible marketing campaign that they had.
Oh, stunning. Still remember the posters, can't you? The vivid colours of people.
It was brilliant. In fact, you know, it's probably one of the greatest marketing campaigns ever in the history of sales. They were late to the party as well. So by 2006, iPods were a cultural phenomenon. And I say this a lot about iPods, but I genuinely think it was the first unisex must-have gadget that was ever created, ever.
Yeah.
Because it was white, you know, and it just suited everybody. And they had like... Also, Zune, weird branding choices. So I'm going back to the colour once again because, you know, brown is just not cool.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I agree that could have been problematic. But for me personally, I like...
You thought it was green anyway.
Well, exactly. But I like the kind of utilitarian nature. The Zune was more like a kind of prop from kind of Blade Runner. Do you know what I mean? Whereas the iPods were quite... sort
Sci-fi.
Of bright, weren't they? They were quite sort of positive, bright, shiny colours. I was quite a fan of Zune. I've just brought up you can't see it, but I've got a load of colours on screen. They did a white one, but they brown and black and kind of rusty colours. And I quite like it. But I think clearly I am in the minority.
Well, one of the other issues was there wasn't an iPod Shuffle equivalent. And we all had Shuffles, right?
Yeah.
I mean, several, like you're talking about colours, because they were so affordable, you could have like different colours, couldn't you, depending on, you know, what you were wearing that day.
I had a few different ones. Clip them to your top, couldn't you?
Yeah, remember? Yeah. I used to use them for running all the time when I actually had bones in my body that could run. You know, so Apple had these sort of budget-friendly Shuffles, while Zune only had their full-size models. They only launched full-size. And the iPhone then arrived as well, just a year later in 2007, which obviously you and I can never forget because we had that infamous test in Barcelona where we jumped off a bridge to test it. Let's get on to that another time. Yeah. And the iPhone obviously completely redefined portable music, making standalone MP3 players feel, well, a little bit passé and outdated, really, because you've got it all on your phone.
A long way. So I guess we come to, you know, the final result. Who won? And the answer is Apple.
No drum roll required.
The iPod dominated. iTunes, of course, changed the way we buy music, and Microsoft quietly shut down the Zune in 2011. But while the Zune flopped, it did lay the groundwork for Microsoft's later focus on services like Xbox Game Pass and Microsoft 365. Like the first one, not so keen on the latter. And fun fact, Zune still has a cult following. I love this. Fans hack them, restore them, and still claim the sound quality is better than modern smartphones. So did Zune deserve to fail, or was it misunderstood? I guess we'll hear from you in comments in future episodes, perhaps.
Yeah, and it, like a lot of things that fail, they do lay the groundwork for something else that comes in the future. So it wasn't all for nothing.
I'm going to give you a nudge for the next bit. Are you ready?
Nudge me, yeah, go on then. Jason's holding up a VHS of one of my favourite films, Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
It's the real thing.
The next battle is Betamax versus VHS.
I love this.
The format war, we're going to call it. So in the mid-70s, home video recording is about to change entertainment forever. So Sony introduces Betamax in 1975. Smaller tapes, superior picture quality, and a promise to revolutionise TV watching. But a year later, JVC counters with VHS. Now, VHS offers longer recording times and it's a cheaper alternative. A decade later, Betamax is gasping for air whilst VHS is in every home. So how did the better format, which it clearly was, lose the war?
I love this. I love it because I'm getting a shiver down my spine, and this is ridiculous. It's probably not healthy. There's probably a little bit of a weird fetish that I have.
Is it because we're going to talk about the porn industry being involved in this?
No, no. Okay. It's nothing as smutty as that. Is it? No, it's not. But you know what I bought at the weekend? I didn't buy it, actually. I got given it.
What?
A VHS player.
Oh, brilliant.
So I found a TV on the street. And
what?
I looked around. Yeah, honestly, I can show you. It's all on my phone. I can show you. I looked around. I was like, grabbed it. Can run, right? No, someone put it out there.
Was it a CRT TV?
No, what it was a first generation sort of flat screen that still had SCART and component video inputs and sound inputs on it, which means I can use it with my consoles. And it's not the bigger, heavier CRT, cathode ray tubes, that you're referring to that I normally have to use, which are quite cumbersome and heavy to use, right?
Yeah.
I've got a few. I've got one here. See, hang on. This wasn't prepared.
Ferreting around.
Listeners and viewers.
Hang on. Ah! Jason's
there you go.
Left his mastermind seat.
So I'm holding up a what's called a PVM, a personal video monitor, made by Sony, used by people like the BBC. Some dust on it. In their sort of outside broadcast vans, where people like Susie Perry are outside on the camera, and they're great. These are for, you know, retro gaming consoles because they've got all the connectors on the back. I'm holding the back, and it's got all kinds of cool component inputs. But they're a little bit expensive to buy secondhand. They heat up and go wrong. And this more modern one was on the side of the road. They'd put it out there for someone to take, so I grabbed it. I pegged it just in case they hadn't put it out there for someone to take.
Yeah, go on.
Just in case they were getting their keys.
Don't leave anything on the street if you live in
Cornwall. There was a car next to it with the boot open. No, there wasn't, honestly.
He's like a shark.
And there's a couple of suitcases, which I also took.
It's like a kleptomania. And he's also got a small child.
Yeah. Yeah, obviously I got a kid in a travel cot, but I think he's been reunited with his mum and dad. And so I grabbed this and ran, and then I thought, oh, my God. And then I went to the local electric shop. This is so, my life is so boring, where I'd put my Hoover to be fixed. And he had a VHS player on the shelf. And I said, oh, I don't suppose you want to sell that, dear. And he goes, oh, you can have it. I was like, really? I don't know if it works. So he gave me it. So then I ran up the, I don't know why I run everywhere.
Because you're thieving. That's fine.
And I got home and I plugged the two together and I watched the first 5 minutes of Blade with Wesley Snipes on a VHS. It was brilliant. And it was, the picture was terrible in a really good way. So that sort of fetishistic thing that I'm talking about with the quality of VHS, I can't enthuse enough about.
Let me give some numbers. Yeah. So obviously I did mention the launch dates, but it's so long ago now, I'm going to mention them again. Betamax, 1975, simpler times when life was absolutely wonderful. VHS a year later, 1976. Now, the tape length in the early models, Betamax, 60 minutes, VHS, 120 minutes. That's massively key. Peak market share going into the 1980s. So, you know, they've had sort of 5 years on. VHS controlled 90% of the market. Total VHS sales, over 900 million tapes worldwide. Betamax's lifespan, Sony kept producing tapes until 2016. I didn't know that. Obviously, Betamax was better. It had a higher resolution, 250 lines versus 240 lines for VHS, and less video noise. Longer playtime essentially won the war. So VHS could record 2 hours at launch, while Betamax was limited to 1 hour. So that is obviously a problem for movies, if you think about it, because the movies, you know, could only fit on the VHS tape and not on a Betamax tape. And here's the key, really, with all of this. Hollywood and the adult film industry, they backed VHS.
Right.
Without that, Betamax could have won, really. But more studios chose VHS, and its popularity, you know, in the porn industry helped cement its dominance.
About the porn industry?
Yeah, because it is a massive factor. Welcome to
the Gadget Show podcast, Porn Special.
Sorry. The VHS Betamax war lasted a lot longer in Japan. So Japan really hung out for quality. Betamax survived into the 1990s. And anyway, eventually Sony gave in by 1988, and even Sony started to make VHS players.
Well, as you know, Susie, I think it was last week, maybe the week before, on an episode, I muted the idea that I would like to do a VHS pop-up where you hire a couple of VHS cassettes, and it became clear an HDMI capable VHS player, and you rent them, you know, and that was, and you were great because you liked that idea, didn't you?
I love it. No, I'm in. Yeah. I'm in on the pop-up.
It's a good idea. So I think, you know, watch this space. What I was going to say is, I know we haven't concluded this just yet though, is actually, and I mean this, I will for the Patreon crowd, I'll show you my setup, the TV that I quite clearly stole, and the VHS player. I'll have to find a tape though that doesn't have a movie on, because we can't show you someone else's, you know, intellectual property. But we can maybe look at the piracy, the FBI piracy warning at the beginning. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah. There you go. There for the Patreons.
Okay. Cool. So why Betamax failed? I mean, it's fairly obvious, really. We've gone through the recording times. Yeah. VHS was also cheaper. More studios backed VHS. JVC licensed VHS to other manufacturers, whereas Sony was kind of more selfish and kept Betamax to itself. So that also, you know, limited availability. And VHS, as you need always, had much better marketing. So we pushed the quality, you know, but JVC pushed the convenience, and convenience won.
So, Susie, I think the verdict is clear, isn't it? VHS, by a knockout.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. I mean, by the late 1980s, Betamax was completely irrelevant, and VHS ruled home entertainment until, of course, DVDs took over in the late 90s, which I think was a sad day, but anyway. So here's the twist then. Betamax wasn't totally a failure, because the tech behind it evolved into professional video formats used by news stations and film stations for decades.
And the Gadget Show. So the first few years, or certainly the first year, sort of 2006-ish, 2005?
Four.
Was it?
Yeah.
Okay. Of the Gadget Show, we were shooting on the industry equivalent of Betamax, sort of Betacam cameras. So, you know, Sony put their technology into something useful that gave birth to the TV show that is the namesake of this here podcast.
There we go. So it wasn't a lost cause.
Can I give you a prompt, a little nudge again? None of this is rehearsed.
Go on. What are you doing?
Just bear with me, caller.
Okay. Oh, my God. What you got? This might be an edge for yourself.
Okay.
Jason is holding up.
First gen Xbox, crystal edition.
Oh, yeah, I couldn't see. Couldn't quite see.
Oh, with the crystal controllers to go with it.
That's ever so beautiful, isn't it?
Look, when I did the research for this, or rather read the research that a brilliant producer did for it, I'm not going to take credit for that because he does such a great job. I didn't realise I had the props to back up all of this. So far, we're only a couple in, and I've got all of it. I've got the iPhone from our previous news item from the viewers' comments. We started with the old CRT TV. We got the VHS, and now we've got the first-gen Xbox. Susie.
Well, Xbox versus PlayStation. So it's 2001. Sony's PlayStation 2 is dominating the gaming world, selling more than 150 million units.
Wow.
But then out of nowhere, Microsoft enters the battlefield with Xbox, a powerful PC-like console boasting better graphics, online play, and a controller the size of a dinner plate.
Oh.
What followed was a 20-year-plus rivalry with groundbreaking consoles, iconic games, and bitter fanboy wars. So, who is really winning? Do you want some numbers? Or do you want to do the numbers?
Well, I don't know. Can we just have a little sort of pause for thought? Because I'm getting excited.
I'm going to digest.
Again. I'm getting a sort of geek arousal.
Okay.
All right, around this concept. I'm just going to put it out there. If I've just made you spit out your tea, I apologise. No, but this is really interesting. And the reason it's interesting is that I am sort of caught right in the middle. I am. And I've got friends that we've had words, you know, we've had words over the years. Like a friend of mine, actually, Phil Hoy, who's, I think, one of our Patreons, he certainly was at the beginning of this adventure. He does his own podcast, and it's all about PlayStations. It's called In PS We Trust. And he's an absolute total PlayStation head, right? Whereas while I don't find the design, apart from that crystal version I just showed you, in general terms, of the Xbox to be particularly emotional, doesn't, you know, summon an emotional reaction in the way that, oh my God, the PlayStation does, right? Especially the first gen. What colour was that sort of grey, bluey grey? Again, I'm colourblind, so please, you know, consider that. It's a beautiful thing. I think on balance, I'm more of an Xboxer in that I've been continually signed up to the Xbox ecosystem and then I dip in and out of PlayStation. Anyway, more on that. Spit some facts.
Some numbers for you then. Mm. So the total consoles sold as of 2024, so from last year, PlayStation, all gens are going to cover here, over 600 million units. Xbox, again, all generations, over 200 million units, so about a third.
Wow.
Best-selling consoles, PlayStation 2, 155 million plus. That is the best-selling console of all time. And Xbox 360, 84 million, Microsoft's highest selling console. Now, the fastest selling PlayStation, because this is always a thing, you know, when it came out, wasn't it? The pre-orders and everything. PS5, 50 million units in 3 years. Fastest selling Xbox, Xbox Series X or S, at 21 million in three years. So less than half. In terms of revenue, and these figures are taken from 2023, so a couple of years ago. Sony PlayStation, $28 billion. Xbox, $15.5 billion. I think, you know, the whole thing about this, I think when people talk about it, often it's a bit like politics, you know, because people get quite heated about it. And they sort of feel like they own their ideas on their gaming system, you know, so
It's part of their identity.
It's quite passionate, doesn't it?
Identity politics, yeah. Mm. It is interesting. I mean, when you mentioned the Xbox 360, I was then thinking, okay, that does challenge my previous point that the design, the physical industrial design, the product design of the units themselves lacks something in the Microsoft camp. Although I would say the Xbox 360s were elegant. There was an interesting shape to that design and some interesting, well, I wouldn't say the color choices were particularly radical, but quite an emotive piece of industrial design, I would say.
Do you know about the first one? The first Xbox prototype was a PC in a giant X-shaped case, wasn't it?
I don't know. Was it really?
Yeah. Oh, wow. Microsoft engineers literally took a Windows PC and shoved it into a metal X before refining it into a console.
This is what's great about it, is they are effectively over-engineered small form factor gaming PCs in a box. And that's good because it means there's a lot of sort of interoperability. If you really know what you're doing, you know, you can get, you can use an Xbox in a multitude of different ways. Jumping to the PlayStation side of the debate, this podcast, I've got to tell you, I am spending a lot of money as a result of this podcast. We keep talking about all these gadgets and then I end up buying them.
You've always been
I totally didn't need a drone, right? But the Avata 2 that we tested way back, straight away, went and bought one of those. And then we did a whole thing about the very subtle visual upgrade that you get from the PlayStation Pro. And that was enough for me to go and buy one. So I've got a beautiful PlayStation Pro in the house, which is in the front room, actually. And I've been really enjoying it. Love the interface. And again, the reason I say that is from a product design point of view. Okay, it's a little big, but it's very beautiful. It's just like some kind of starship from a Kubrick movie. It's beautiful. The thing is, I've been able to dip my toe back in Gran Turismo, which I've really enjoyed. But I couldn't live without Halo. That's probably an exaggeration.
I think but we could all live without done, anybody.
Despite what I am, look, there is an end to me going on, and it's coming in about 10 seconds. So just hold on, everyone. I'm just going to say that, okay, they've done their best to try and ruin Halo, right? But I'm still in. I'm still there with Master Chief. Susie.
Also, I suppose, you know, we should mention that Xbox Game Pass has completely changed the industry. Microsoft's Netflix style subscription service has got over 34 million subscribers.
No. 34 million?
It generates billions. Billions.
So what I love about that, okay, is that prop.
Oh God, this is like the prop show.
So in here, you'll know, I've probably shown you it before. We've definitely covered it in our first few episodes. We've got the Steam Deck, right? Made by Valve. But what's great about the Steam Deck is I can go to my Steam library and I can do all my bits. I can grab my Steam games onto this device, right, of course. But I can also play my Game Pass games on it. And Microsoft have been really generous and opened the Game Pass experience to devices like that, devices like the iPhone or Android. You can play it on anything. You can play in a number of different ways. You can stream it off their servers, or you can often download it locally. So I think Game Pass represents the pinnacle, really, of what makes the Xbox ecosystem so great.
So Game Pass is literally a game changer. I think it's more than fair to say. So what about a verdict then? Who is winning? Obviously, you know, we'd like to get your thoughts on this. Clearly, PlayStation dominates sales. But the question is Xbox playing the long game? You know, with Game Pass and cloud gaming, Microsoft is pushing a future where owning a console in the future might not even matter. So is the real winner the one with the most consoles sold, or the one redefining how we play?
Great. Well put. Like, you're so right. This battle ain't over yet, is it, Susie? And I just feel that, you know, the talk that we've mentioned before on the podcast about the rumoured portable Xbox, which just makes me so excited to think about what that might look like. And the fact that Microsoft have bought so many studios and that they own so many, you know, really critically important gaming franchises. Yeah. It's definitely not over yet. And there is this story has a long way to go. And I just can't wait to be part of it. But ultimately, it doesn't matter what we think. It matters what you think.
And it's healthy rivalry, I think, is also, you know, worth just making a point of that before we move on to our next debate.
Yeah, absolutely. Love to read some of your thoughts on this one. So we've tackled some legendary battles, but that is part one of our famous tech rivalries. Don't worry, there are plenty more to come.
Yeah, next time we'll be back with part two, where we'll dive into even more iconic face-offs and maybe even settle a few long-standing debates along the way.
Or maybe start some new ones, Suze. Yep. But whatever, we love having you along for the ride, so please keep those comments coming in.